to the Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
All right, I told you all, I confessed I've been watching Oprah for about a week. Oprah, the queen of all white women, up until she supported Obama, then she lost her conservative white woman base. We have a segment. I have a dilemma. You can send dilemma at CedricMuhammad.com. Dilemma at CedricMuhammad.com. If you want me to give you some advice, I'll dig down deep, street knowledge, wisdom from the ages, scripture, mistakes and experiences from the past. I'll apply it all on your behalf. Listen to this dilemma of sorts from the teachings of Oprah.
So we're entangling some of life's stickiest situations with Faith Saley, a monthly contributor to O Magazine's Now What Should I Do column, and Randy Cohen. He's the ethicist for the New York Times. He's the face behind that column. Michelle is joining us from her family room via Skype. I love talking to people while they're right in their homes watching our show. She's in Atlanta with a delicate dilemma. I know that many moms of teen, how many of you here are teenagers? Okay, listen to this one. Michelle, we have Faith and Randy here, ready to help. Go ahead. I already know what the question is.
Hi.
All you parents out there, come on, listen up.
Thank you so much. The reason this is my question. I have a 12-year-old son. He recently just met a really pretty 12-year-old girl. They were about to have their first kiss. Someone walked in the room. So, of course, it didn't happen. After the next day, she texted him over and over and over, "Baby, I miss you. I like you. I love you. I want to see you. Call me." This is 2 12-year-olds. She wanted to go to second base with him.
She said that in the text, right? I want to go to second base.
In her
base.
Texas.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to go to second
then
base.
Please call me. Please call me. The next day, she also said, "I would like to offer you oral sex. I love you."
Okay.
Okay, so my question is this. My son was very upset. I was very upset, needless to say. But there was a side of me that said, should I call this 12-year-old girl's mother and let her know what's going on? Or is it not my place to do that and just deal directly with my son on this matter?
Randy?
I heard the cry of yes, yes. and I'm with them.
Okay.
But not just on ethical grounds, or not about sexual ethics, but about protecting our children. That if you think a child is going to engage in genuinely dangerous behavior, we all have to step up. It's like when we were little kids and our neighbors...
Some people would argue that oral sex is not genuinely dangerous.
I think when a 12-year-old is involved, it's dangerous. Are they going to have safe sex, the 12-year-old? I think maybe not. But I think this is when it's our obligations as adults, as members of a community, to make sure our children are not doing anything dangerous.
Faith?
I feel like I'm going to be pilloried by all the moms who are saying, yes, yes, tell. But I think that your first priority is to preserve this relationship you have with your son. I think you should be elated as a mom that your 12-year-old son came to you and shared this information and didn't think, you know, I'm too cool to tell my mom. So I think that this is a perfect opportunity to you tell your son, you know, tell that girl that, you know, my mom reads my text, so don't write that kind of stuff. And that opens up the great opportunity to have the, you know, what do you think you should do about this?
You're missing the question.
Yeah, I think
should
so
she
too.
Have told her mom? Your son could be incredibly embarrassed, and that would cut off lines of communication with you in the future. I think
this is about how you tell, not if you tell. That you should let your son know that you're going to do this. You should do it in a way that doesn't embarrass him. He didn't tell you this as a secret. It's wonderful that your son is this open, but I think you can still protect this other child without betraying the trust of your son.
Well, he told me this.
Okay, good, Michelle.
Yeah. And so it had already gotten around the neighborhood that this was going to happen. So he felt very pressured that you know, he was supposed to accept her offer. And also, I don't know the mother or the father or this little girl as well. So I felt very uncomfortable calling a complete stranger and saying, this is what your daughter's doing at the age of 12.
So you haven't done anything yet, is that correct?
Well, at this point, no. That's why I'm here with you. I just tell her that I've read all her texts and that I know what she's doing, and she better not text again, or I will call the mother.
Has she texted again?
Yes.
Wow. She wants your boy.
Yes, she does. Wow.
Yeah.
So you're saying she should call the mother?
I think so. It's to protect the reputation of her son, to protect the reputation of the 12-year-old girl. Kids gossip in ways that can be very, very cruel.
Now, isn't this interesting? This is interesting. I just thought of this. Just bing, 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 light bulb. If your son were a daughter and it were a 12-year-old boy pursuing your daughter, would there be less qualms about calling the mother of the 12-year-old boy who was pursuing your daughter?
I love your audience. Yes, I'm with them on this. They were wrong before, but they're right now.
Yeah.
If there is a gender breakdown in how people respond, and there may well be, well, that's sexism.
Yes.
And 12-year-old boys have to act responsibly, and we have to be concerned for their safety, too.
Yes.
They should not be praying
on
public.
I can tell a mother that's a total stranger that your daughter, at the age of 12, is...
But I'm asking you, just think about this, Michelle. Is it because it's a daughter? If this were a 12-year-old boy who were texting your daughter saying, I want to go to second base with you, would you have a problem calling up that boy's mother to say, your son... See, that's what I'm asking you to think about.
Probably not.
Yeah. You wouldn't have a problem if it were a boy saying, I want to go to second base, and it was your daughter. So it's the same thing, is what you're saying. It's the same thing. You have to protect your son as much as you would your daughter.
It's not that you're trying to get the son in trouble. You're trying to protect them. But these are 12-year-old children. This is risky. Someone should make sure their parents know.
How would your son feel if... How do you think your son... Have you talked this over with your son? How is your 12-year-old son going to feel if you call her mother? Has he said, please don't call her mother?
Yes. Please don't call her mom. I'll be made fun of.
Yep.
Please, you know.
Yep. Yeah.
But the bottom line is her mother has no clue. You know, is it my place to call this woman and tell her what her daughter's doing?
Yes.
She's doing it to your son.
Yeah.
Is it my responsibility?
If it were a boy, you would do it. You would absolutely do it. And you're right. You have to protect your son because, you know, all the other 12-year-old boys are going to be, what? Your mom called and you was sex and you turned it down? Yeah. So that, you know, so in that way, they're both right, I think, here.
Well, that can get the son off the hook, too, because at 12, he might not be ready for this. And then he can say, oh, I would have, but my mother, darn her, messed in here.
Yeah.
And he may be very relieved that she did.
Yeah, all he can say is my mother found that he can say, you know, as you did, saw the text messages. Yes, hi.
What about involving the school, like the social worker or something, takes the mother out of the picture so the boy can't get blamed and pulls it into the school where they can speak with the mom?
No. This is a...
No?
Sorry? No.
No,
we really don't think that, do we, Faith?
I think it's a creative, we're getting close to a creative solution of not ruining the openness she has with her son. If a person has come to her with this and begging, mom, don't tell, you're trying to think creatively, how does the information get to where it should go, to this woman, to this girl's mother, and not compromise her son?
What is your intention here, Michelle? What do you want to do?
I feel like I've abandoned this little girl. There's a side of me that says, I feel like she's 12 years old, and she's like a little kid with a broken bicycle on the side of the street, and I'm just passing her by in my car doing nothing.
Yeah.
I think, you know,
right.
I think that's very, Michelle, that's very compassionate, and maybe you could have a conversation where you explain it to your son like that. Like, this is, you know, I feel compelled to talk to her mother because this is how I see this girl, and I hope I appreciate your coming to me, you say to your son, and I hope you'll allow me to discuss it with her mom because of that. And that keeps the lines of communication with you and your son open as well and makes him feel like he's being heard.
Okay, but I'm also afraid of how the mother will react to me when I tell her this.
You can only come into it with your best intentions, and you can't control how people react.
Yeah, do it with love. Don't come into it with as an accusatory thing. Come at her when you approach her. I do know something about communication. So when you approach her, it should be with a loving spirit, not look at what your daughter has done to my son, or you should know, and this little
girl. Or you're a bad parent.
You're a bad parent. It should be like, I'm really concerned. I'm calling. I think you have a beautiful daughter, and then I have some concerns because your daughter has been communicating with my son, and I just wanted to share them with you. Isn't that
perfect?
Perfect.
Yeah.
In fact, if you would make that call for
her. Hey, Michelle, I'll call her.
Please make that call for her.
Yeah, really. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, okay. Michelle from Atlanta. Thanks for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be right back.
There may be nothing worse than being an expert guest on Oprah's show because she always thinks she knows more than her guests. Well, she might in some cases. Now, first of all, shout out to this 12-year-old boy or the mother that they're so close. Because this is kind of unusual if this is true. A 12-year-old boy is propositioned for oral sex by a 12-year-old girl, and he takes the text message and shows it to his mom. Now I don't want to say the wrong thing. He may not know what oral sex is, but the relationship between he and his mother is such that that's pretty, I don't know. I think this mother may have actually cracked into his text messages. It doesn't sound right. But anyway, perhaps shout out to that mother for raising her son in such a way where he feels that comfortable. Now, I never heard of that before. That sounds suspect, slightly. I think she may have cracked into his text messages and lured him into a strategic conversation where he knew that his mom knew something, so he came clean. Anybody feeling me on that? But that was some good teaching from Oprah. Don't go to a social worker. I don't know who came up with that one to try to keep it in the school system. First of all, you don't know what the school system is teaching the children about sex education, to trust them. Evidently, something is amiss. I feel compassion for the young girl because she's going to be enormously embarrassed and actually just shocked, traumatized into acting like she doesn't have certain feelings, where obviously she does. So you will stop her from performing oral sex on a 12-year-old boy. This particular 12-year-old boy, but you haven't necessarily dealt with what's inside of the girl. Now, if you go to the mother, I mean, just imagine the conversation between that 12-year-old daughter and her mother. That's where I think this thing could go bad, because the mother is going to be embarrassed and mortified. The daughter is going to be horrified. Could get ugly. That 12-year-old girl is this thing could go either way after her mother confronts her, because it seems to me that no mother may be prepared to hear that. I don't know, maybe I'm being a little too I remember when I was in school, there were 11-year-old girls who were active with the GIs. But I don't think any of the parents knew that. I don't know. If you have any thoughts, let me know. Somebody sending me a text message. I got a text message saying that oral sex thing is going around amongst the young girls, though they feel they have to one-up the other girl in nastiness to show love. They also send nude photos around. I've heard about that. We talked about texting. See, the problem I have with discussions like this is that they come with some premise that's flawed, which is that families are intact, that children aren't really being raised by the streets or culture, entertainment culture anyway. I mean, the family has been overcome, the school system has been overcome, all the stewarding institutions have been overcome, and now all of a sudden, as a parent, you have something like this thrown in your lap, and the presupposition is that you have the power to correct it, when you don't. In a certain sense, if you have a 12-year-old, if you have someone who's 12 years old, and you haven't been able to instill certain things, and you still let them watch TV, listen to nasty music, watch nasty movies, hang out with friends that are nasty, go to school where nastiness is the order of the day, how in the world are you really, with a pep talk or a scolding or even a spanking, gonna overcome the world? So it's kind of like, in economics, we have this concept called a closed economy, in a certain sense, where you try to act like things that happen in America have no effect on the outside world, and the outside world has no effect on the economy that you're in, and that's a flawed premise. There's no such thing as a closed economy in this world of globalization. Well, it's the same thing. There's no such thing as parental control. If you're sending your children to schools that you have no influence in, if you are feeding them a culture that's degenerate, and you don't have the heart to turn the TV off or take a CD away, then you have no parental control. It's over. It's a wrap. Anyway. Shout out again to that 12-year-old boy and his mom. If he how many of you all that have 12-year-olds think, I'm talking about boys, if you have a 12-year-old boy, you have a 12-year-old boy, and your 12-year-old boy gets a text from a 12-year-old girl offering him oral sex, you know, I just thought of something else. I think this girl may not be attractive. I think, in a way, this young boy has ratted out a girl that perhaps he didn't like. Perhaps she was too big and strong for him. Why? Something don't fit. I see, I can't even get myself to ask the hypothetical question because something's not right. I'm going to write Oprah. I'm going to tell Oprah, either that parent broke into the text capacity of that young person's cell phone and found out about this and confronted him indirectly and he spilled the beans, or this young 12-year-old boy never liked this 12-year-old girl and he is now selling her out, diming her out, embarrassing her. Ew, mom. Ew, look what this girl wrote on my phone. That don't sound right. Can I get an amen on this? Any of you all, single parents or not, black, Latino, white, Asian, you have a 12-year-old boy that you think would show you a text message if he was propositioned by another 12-year-old for sex? You think he'd, hey mom, here, look what this girl sent me on my cell phone. I don't believe that, because I think that the child would be concerned about privacy. I'm going to show my mom a text message from one girl. She's going to want to see more. This don't sound right, Oprah. This don't sound right. Brother Charles, something's not right, man. I can't see this. The single moms will have to bear witness. You can send me an email, comment@blackcoffeechannel.com or dilemma@cedricmuhammad.com. I don't want none of your other nasty, salacious stuff. I just brought this up because the teachings of Oprah, I'm now starting to entertain, converting to Oprah-anity, and this topic caught my eye. Don't send me, I don't want to hear about none of your domestic problems. I'm not, give me ethical issues, interpersonal matters that don't deal with nothing like this. But for the sake of this discussion, I need verification. Have any of you mothers out there had a 12-year-old boy voluntarily bring you their cell phone and show you a text message that they got from a young person that was inappropriate? I can't see it. I can't. Let's talk about Kobe. Kobe's about to get his fourth ring, y'all.
Well, I don't know. I suppose some of us.
Kobe's about to get his fourth ring. Magic Johnson just interviewed him. Listen up.
You're the one guy that got a chance to be the greatest player that's ever played this game. What would that mean to Kobe?
You know, I don't even know what that means. It's impossible to say that one player is the best. You can't do it.
But they all bring different talents.
Everybody brings different things. Everybody's different. Everybody's great in their own right. I mean, I don't even need to say everything that you've done. And Michael and Larry and then on and on and on and on and on. It's just to be in a group of those players for me is extremely special.
Will this championship be special or just the same doing it without Shaquille?
You know, a lot of people make a lot out of that.
Yeah.
People that don't know what they're talking about make a lot out of that. You know, the truth is he never would have won without me. And we would never would have won without Fisher, Robert, Ori, Phil, and everybody else. I mean,
exactly.
That's just the truth of the matter.
You're the one guy that got a chance to be the greatest player that's ever played this game. What would that mean to
you? You know what's so gangster about that? Magic don't believe that himself. Magic is setting Kobe up. He don't believe that Kobe has a shot to be the greatest player ever to play the game. I don't believe that. Anyway, go ahead, Magic.
You're the one guy that got a chance to be the greatest player that's ever played this game. What would that mean to Kobe?
You know, I don't even know what that means. It's impossible to say that one player is the best. You can't do it.
But they all bring different
Everybody
talents.
Brings different things. Everybody's different. Everybody's great in their own right. I mean, I don't even need to say everything that you've done. And Michael and Larry and then on.
Did you check that out? Kobe doesn't think that Magic is on his level. I'm not promoting disunity among brothers. Don't get me wrong. But come on, man. Magic is saying Kobe's the greatest player ever. Kobe is saying, oh, man, I don't even have to say what you done. That's because he probably don't even want to run it down. You got two rings, Magic. I got three. One more time, man. We're going to move on.
You're the one guy that got a chance to be the greatest player that's ever played this game. What would that mean to Kobe?
You know, I don't even know what that means. It's impossible to say that one player is the best. You can't do it.
But they all bring different talents.
Everybody brings different things. Everybody's different. Everybody's great in their own right. I mean, I don't even need to say everything that you've done. And Michael and Larry and then on and on and on and on and on. It's just to be in a group of those players for me is extremely special.
Will this championship be special or just the same doing it without Shaquille?
You know, a lot of people make a lot out of that.
Yeah.
People that don't know what they're talking about make a lot out of that. You know, the truth is he never would have won without me. And we would never would have won without Fish or Robert or Phil and everybody else. I mean,
exactly.
That's just the truth of the matter.
No, you would have won without Fish. You would have won without Derek Fisher. You would maybe not have won without Robert Horry. You definitely would have won without Derek Fisher. I mean, is this just kind of like reeking of phoniness? I mean, it's cool phoniness. I'm not saying that they don't like each other. It's kind of patronizing. Oh, man, you're going to go down to be the greatest of all time. And then Magic will get on the phone with Jordan and they'll know that that's not true. They know that's not true. Let me try this one more time. I'm sorry.
You're the one guy that got a chance to be the greatest player that's ever played this game. What would that mean to Kobe?
You know, I don't even know what that means. It's impossible to say that one player is the best.
Oh, man.
You can't do it.
But they all bring different
Everybody
talents.
Brings different things. Everybody's different. Everybody's great in their own right. I mean, I don't even need to say everything that you've done. And Michael and Larry and then on and on and on and on and on. It's just to be in a group of those players for me is extremely special.
Will this championship be special or just the same doing it without Shaquille?
You know, a lot of people make a lot out of that.
Yeah.
People that don't know what they're talking about make a lot out of that. You know, the truth is he never would have won without me. And we would never would have won without Fisher, Robert, Ori, Phil, and everybody else. I mean,
exactly.
That's just the truth of the matter.
All right, y'all. Back on how I started the show on political identity, the whackness of ideology, the value of business 101, self-enlightened interest, the realism that that will bring, and end the kind of whacktivism that's running rampant out here. As a professor, Joseph Lowndes, he made an interesting point about the fall of conservatism and democratic liberalism or liberal democrat. Yeah, democratic liberalism, I think. He made a good point. Ideologies never can withstand the change in cultural identity, demographic shifts, the whole nine. Listen up.
I think we are kind of at a twilight of the Reagan Revolution, and in fact, many of the soldiers of that revolution say the same thing, Pat Buchanan, Newt Gingrich, and others, that I think what happens in American political history is that certain ideas dominate and certain political imperatives shape the landscape. And then over time they start to wane as new political questions arise and new circumstances arise and new players come onto the scene to change political identities. And I think now, in some ways, like democratic liberalism in the 1970s, the Republican right has kind of run out of gas or is in an era of splintering and major internal fights over the future direction of the party. I mean, it was interesting to see in the primaries, the Republican primaries, you had a whole range of candidates, none of whom could fully credibly claim conservative credentials, and yet all of them invoking Reagan over and over.
And what does that mean for the South?
You know, the South is very much in play in a way that it has not been in a generation. In this last national election, presidential election, you saw it in North Carolina, and not in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi, across the South. I think black voters are playing a more decisive role than they have previously. Latino voters are playing a more decisive role. And I think white voters are themselves much more fragmented. And part of this has to do with changing political identities. Part of it has to do with strong enforcements of the Voting Rights Act in the South, more so recently, which has opened up a lot of territory to exciting change.
Yeah, so the point I was making about ideology, Professor Lowndes here, went into is, what I mean is, ideologies survive as constructs and ways to think through the world abstractly or intellectually, but they don't survive in terms of being applied as strategy. So you can't win consistently with the conservative ideology per se. You can win in cycles with that ideology, but not consistently. Identity, demographic change, things like that are going to pop up that are going to, the things that the professor mentioned, civil rights laws being applied properly, immigration explosion, the whole nine. That's why the real world is President Obama praising Ronald Reagan yesterday. That's the real world. The real world is not left progressive ideology. It's not conservative ideology. The real world is, I need a majority to govern with. That's the real world. So he has gotten the young. President Obama's gotten the young. He's gotten independents. He's gotten Republicans, Obamacans. This is impressive. Ain't got nothing to do with policy. Couldn't even name policies that President Obama is going to pass or has passed. You feel me? But he's a master tactician, strategist, organizer, pragmatist. That's why he cannot get wrapped up in the 24-hour news cycle. Speak to us, Mr. President.
As I don't find most of the cable chatter very persuasive. I've used this analogy before. It feels like WWF wrestling. Everybody's got their role to play.
Right.
I know a lot of these guys, and if Pat Buchanan is having a conversation with Chris Matthews or talking to Keith Olbermann, everybody's got their set pieces, and so I don't feel as if I'm learning anything from the debate.
Beautiful. The President of the United States reveals it. Everyone's playing a role. He said WWF too, not WWE. WWF. Everyone's playing their role. Chris Matthews, Ed Schultz, Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Keith Olbermann. What's the young lady's name on CNN? Campbell Brown. It's acting. You can't learn from that beyond a certain point. That's why President Obama reads 5 newspapers a day. That's what he said last night. I will be watching part 2 of Inside the Oval Office. This is why I voted for this man. I like the Lakers, I'll say in 6. I like the Lakers in 6. And some advice for LeBron. Brother, this is what you do. Go to New York. Try to win it again next year, but this is what you do. In the offseason, you don't diss your teammates. I know that's not in you. You just say, I think we just need a couple upgrades. Say a couple upgrades. Let the media and the fans go crazy. Figure out. I think Cleveland needs an outside shooter, and they need a slashing. They don't need a power forward. They need a slashing. A slasher. It could be. J.R. Smith would be perfect if Cleveland had J.R. Smith. I love J.R. Smith, man. I wish the 76ers had him. Man, he's nice. How nice is J.R. Smith, y'all? Man could shoot a 3-pointer from anywhere. So LeBron, go do another year, go to New York, then go to China, go to Europe and China. That's how you get to be a billionaire. You're not going to be a billionaire playing basketball in America, even New York. Get the New York money. You and Jigga work that out. I mean, y'all know Jay-Z's getting his cut either way. Those ain't the only did it. That's cool. That's my quick advice for LeBron. Go to New York, brother. Please. Do not stay in Cleveland. Another unique, enjoyable show. If you want to get at me, comment at blackcoffeechannel.com, dilemma at cedricmuhammad.com. If you have a dilemma, I just wanted to know about the relationship between some mothers and their 12-year-old boys. Is it that tight that your son would come to you the same that this... in the same way, with the same sensitive subject matter that this boy was purported to have done on Oprah. I believe something is fishy. I believe either the mother tapped into the cell phone and read the text and then arranged a scenario to confront him indirectly to bring it out of him, or the young boy never liked the girl. The girl may have a bad reputation, perhaps. I don't think he liked the girl. And he played the role of, ew, look at this. Not knowing how out of control this is now going to be. Now it's on Oprah. I'm sure he never foresaw that. Very interesting to see how the president's visit to the, not Africa, Egypt's not Africa, y'all. Can't wait to see him go to the pyramids. From what I understand, he's going to go to the pyramids and the Sphinx. I said Sphinx as in Leon Sphinx, not Sphinx. Sphinx. He's going to go see the Sphinx, I think. Something. How about that for irony? The secret of all the societies, the divinity, the divine identity of the black man and woman, got a black president going to Egypt, and they're calling it the Middle East, Arab world, or Muslim world, not Africa. Some Egyptians like that, though. They like to, I won't get into that. Had some interesting conversations with some Northern Africans who, anyway, some beautiful Northern Africans I'm now friendly with that this does not apply to. But some folk, you know what I'm saying? Some of us want to claim something that we're not. We all know what time it is. We're going to mosey out. I'm reachable. Missed you all last week. Man, is there anything else? Ben Harper. Yes, that's the album, The Cop. Cop the Ben Harper album. I give it 4 out of 5 crescents. Eminem, The End of an Era. He's still nice lyrically. One of the best that ever did it lyrically. The beats are very nice. Dr. Dre did a good job. They sound too similar, though. However, 10 years of that story, it's getting a little stale. We will be playing no more Eminem records on this show. Unless he calls in and wants to give me some nice traffic. And of course, we'll revise that. Love y'all. Sorry about the problem with the comment box today. You can still email me, though. I don't know. Nothing wrong with that. Maybe some of you all don't want to know. Want me to know your address. Spatial Dimension Reverb. We're going to talk more about music. Go to the Facebook page. Become a fan of the show. And we can continue our dialogue. I promise you, I will be updating it and will not leave you in the wilderness. Somebody straighten out the anti-hunger activists in Harlem who want to send money out of the community coming from the government and give it to Costco. We can't form our own store? I mean, it's big money in that. Any business plan can be written. You got some top Latino, black, West Indian, Asian business persons who could review that plan and get some money. Millions could be raised instantly in Harlem for a Costco competitor. They'll take food stamps. Now somebody accused me of payola by saying I would play an Eminem record if he called into this show. I'm being honest. They had to just take me to jail. I will spin Eminem. I can make that happen too, but we'll see. We have a mutual friend. We really do. It's the internet, man. Later for payola. Cats wanna advertise. Now let me stop. Nah, I'm serious. I'm dead serious. Elliot Spitzer was fighting payola, I think. Look what happened to him. Shout out to Eric Donalo. He's the man. He resigned as the superintendent of the Department of Insurance in New York. I expect big things out of him, maybe AG. He was one of the best on the financial crisis. Eric Donalo. Keep your eye on him. I'm feeling him. But Elliot Spitzer came against payola, and look where it got him. Field of Dreams. I cried at the end of Field of Dreams. The end of Field of Dreams, y'all. Kevin Costner. Yup. I don't trust myself in public, man. I didn't cry for a long time before this recent rash and outbreak. See you next week.
And now I shall give you the first cue as to the nature of the great master key which has been responsible for all the great successes in every calling in every part of the world. Please listen carefully to what I have to say, because you may discover the secret of the master key in this first visit. You may get your first cue as to the nature of the great master key when I tell you that psychologists have discovered a natural law which is the very foundation of all personal successes. And I can describe it to you in one short sentence so you can understand it. Whatever the mind can conceive and believe, the mind can achieve.